Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
Recognize that they are on a dangerous path and make difficult adjustments to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulders. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter. For sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, which is part of Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be part of the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are. You can follow along in the chat, talk to us, and read the poems as we do. So check out Late Night Poets on allpoetry.com. I am Aphasiana, and with me I have Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hello. How's it going? Welcome back. Both of us.
Yes, welcome back to you too. It's been a rough couple weeks, but it's good to be back.
Feeling better? Yeah, I had a horrible laryngitis. Had a in-theater concert I went to, and I screamed a little too much, and then I had absolutely no voice. I'm like, I can't possibly do this. I'm making no noise.
I had no voice either, but it was more because I couldn't breathe, because after I had COVID, I had a bit of pneumonia. So it was like, every time I tried to talk, and that just wasn't a great sound for radio.
Yeah, I mostly had gravel, a little bit of frog, but, like, it wouldn't be able to hear it very well. It's not good. I'm like, this isn't going to work. I can't do this. So, that's why we weren't here. But
yes. If you didn't want to hear me wheezing and Babbler's gravel, then you were saved last week when we postponed.
I'm like,
still
oh, no.
A little gravelly. I got a bit of raspiness going on, but I don't know. We'll make it work.
Yeah, I'm doing much better. I'm tired. I had a really horribly rough day at work. A horribly rough week at work, honestly. But that's okay. It's all right. It's over. Pulled a 12-hour shift today. I'm tired. My sister's here in town today. So.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So. Oh.
Yay, weekend. I'm hoping I can stay awake tomorrow for my friend's annual Scottish party. He does this birthday party for himself where everybody brings a bottle of scotch and everybody shares. I personally don't partake because I have celiac disease. It would kill me. But and everyone wears plaid. And goes a little bit crazy. I am not normally one for parties, but Oren has the best parties. So usually twice a year I go to his house for a party, and this is one of those things. Now, I have not managed to stay awake for a whole day in what, 3 weeks now? I have to fall asleep every 3 hours, but we will see if I manage to be a part of the festivities.
Impromptu napping. Awesome.
Right? I'll be that lady passed out on the couch, and not because I'm drunk.
Every party needs at least one person passed out on the couch, right? That's how you know it was a good party, I think.
I suppose so. That'll be me, it would seem. Luckily, it's good people there. I will be safe. On to the poetry. Our contest this week was inspired by an artist. So Robert Strady has the series that he calls Fragmented, and it's broken plates that he uses to start drawings, paintings, and I believe, it's been a while since I read about it, that originally it was, you know, an accidental break of some really beautiful, valuable dishes, and someone was like, well, can we recreate these? Can we fix them? And while he couldn't fix it in the terms of making it a plate again, what he could do was open up the image and capture the beauty of these broken plates and expand them with his own art. So that's what he did. And the prompts are images of these broken plates where he has drawn the images that match the plates and what's been lost in their broken pictures. And it goes outward from the plate. They are expanding into the canvases, into the world beyond that plate. So you'll have to check out Robert Strady. I learned about him on mymodernmet.com, but he has his own website as well. And, really, really cool art. So if you aren't looking at it now, by all means, check it out after the show, because some really, really neat art. Now,
great.
We have some really cool entries to this, and I'm going to start with Ben Hart. And his is called Imperfect Perspectives. 1. Kitchens and hallways, blue ships. Those broken cups, falling saucers, and picture frames betrayed a memorial to Mom and Dad's little wars fought in kitchens and hallways. Every delftware fragment, a vessel for every hateful thing. They never meant to sound so true, to sail back to loving places on the tides of their anger and not leave it marooned, where it could lay roots and follow into fields of apathy. Blue ships, I would have sailed off porcelain cliffs if I could have, but I'm a flatlander, a childhood bystander, who didn't want anger's lighthouse eye to fall upon anyone. We may have built this house on shards and splinters, made the kitchen floor from fine china fletchettes, but you'll never kick us out, and we'll survive the winter. It may be war behind our door, but staying, that's something none of us regrets. 2. As Good as It Gets. Chiquita's End echoes out of the cathedral onto Opposition Street, a piano man's hands to go to war against a world of Jim Crow rookeries, gilded windmills, and dishonest disbelief. And somewhere past the Cypress Estates, all the children are running away, making a sunset run for it, into their 20s, chasing the wren, freed in their fluttering. They escape across canary fields of rapeseed, never to come back again, saying, Mother Earth, or otherwise, let us be poor. All these things, these obligations, and the tokens they pay, we don't need them anymore. Only a thing called time do we ask for a plethora, the time to shout up, I love yous, at the lonely geese in the V's, that brave avian sentinel who is getting disheartened, or for putting pennies into the pockets of the plentiful to remind them where they started, the time to watch something heal by their kintsugi touch, to steal something, feel something, stand without crutches, to scheme something, dream something, and dance with a duchess. Run with the herds to the highlands, far from tomorrow's heavy horizon. Feel the Midas sun on the backs of their neck, instead of history's nasty black breath seeping down to their shoulders and chests. We're all dying young. That's as good as it gets. 3. The Babbler and the Beautiful Brain. There is a girl a world away, who is so over coming in second the imperfect pageant that is perception. Just because her brain sometimes backfires doesn't mean she wanders wrong directions, but sadly, this hurried world is so quick to misconceptions. Afriella, they may not see the beautiful dream that has you drifting. The clouds are a bouquet of kites, of a sky that fell in love with you at first sight, and then again every day after. Why else would it send its most beloved bard, that old world songbird, Afriella? There is a babbler in the garden, right where she's always been, waiting to fall safely asleep in her favorite abstract hands, and she's singing. Do not hope to see where the rainbow ends. Just enjoy the bit where heaven bends. And I know sometimes you get blue and you feel like you should have ran, but I promise one day you will see, you will understand that Afriella, it was you where the rainbow began. End poem.
Wonderful read, Afriella. What an interesting write from Ben. I loved how it starts out like really directly referential to the artists, you know, the kitchens and the hallways and the blue ships, you know, how sometimes dishes get broken into like domestic violence, essentially, you know, fights and smashing plates and, you know, which is a really frightening thing. I've only had plates thrown at me once. It's really kind of frightening. you know, and to see all of these things that get smashed in anger, and then to look more closely at that patterning, you know, the blue ships, which is a pretty popular pottery design, you know, that imagery of the sailing ships. I forget what it's called. It has a specific name, but I can't think of it. I think it's Rookwood, something like that. Anyway, and to take that and pull that, like, directly into the piece, you know, to say, like, blue ships, I would have sailed off porcelain cliffs if I could have, but I'm a Flatlander, a child of a bystander who didn't want anger's lighthouse eye to fall upon anyone, you know, to not be able to escape it because it's your parents fighting, you know, to be stuck in observing and not wanting to be caught in, like, that spotlight. Not just yourself, but anybody, you know, that empathy of that. And then to realize, you know, like, this is the foundation of my life, you know, and I'm still here and I'm still standing, you know, but this is where I came from. To then go into, you know, this next section where it's about escape, you know, these children are growing up, and they don't want the repeats of these things. They don't want to get caught in the grind of adulthood, you know, especially when you're raised in a home that, you know, involves fighting and arguing. I've been seeing some videos lately on social media that pop up that are like, you know, my parents ask me when I'm going to give them grandkids, and then it says, also my parents, and it's like a flashback to their childhood where they're like, I gave everything for you. Raising you was so hard. You cost all my money. I have no time. I can't relax. Like, why aren't you having any kids? It's just kind of funny. You know, but to come from that place and not want to repeat that, not want to have that same thing happen to you, you know, let us be poorer, all of these things, these obligations and the tokens they pay. We don't need them anymore. Only of a thing called time do we ask for a plethora. You know, why can't things be simpler? It is kind of funny. You know, we've invented this whole world that is, like, based on economics, on how to get yourself your basic needs met, you know, your shelter, home, food, et cetera, and yet we've convoluted it to the point where, like, we have to do taxes and go to work for 40 hours a week, and, you know, and it's like, we're literally on a planet that, like, grows food, and we've complicated it to this point. You know, it'd be really nice if all of that responsibility didn't really exist, you know, like all of those expectations. And the idea of these children making this mad dash to the horizon, you know, feel the Midas song on the backs of their necks instead of history's nasty black breath seeping down their shoulders and chests. We're all dying young. That's as good as it gets. You know, this idea that cycles repeat and not wanting to be a part of that cycle. And then this third section, which I think is very flatteringly, you know, in kind of about you and I, if you will. you know, about who we are and the way that we've kind of dealt with trauma and the way that we message that to the world, you know, to kind of share our little fractures, our broken plates, and not forget that, you know, pain can be a thing of beauty, and to share it and not hide it, you know, helps people to feel less alone. So I really thought this was a beautiful piece. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you, Ben. Susanna, your thoughts?
I loved it. The whole thing, I mean, the three different sections are distinct but work together. And I really like that Ben's been doing that in a few different poems where he breaks it up into sections. And every section is just, like, magnificent in its own way. I mean, the first one does a perfect combination of, like, using the dishes, literally, like you said, you know, a fight where they're actually throwing the dishes, and how those broken cups and the plates and all of that can be part of domestic violence. And then it's talking about, like, the floor being lined with it, but also it's using it as the inspiration for escape, because on those dishes there is patterns of transportation, like the boats, and the kids can focus on that escape, looking at the drawings on it instead of the fact that it's broken and scary. And this works so well with the idea of the art, where it goes outside of the plate and it seems to go off into like imagination as it leaves the shape of the plate. And I see that as in this sense, the child's imagination of imagining what would happen if you could get into the good part of the plate instead of the broken aspect of it. And that goes into having the good part of the family without that brokenness. And yet they ended up staying, and they were not kicked out into the winter. They made the best with their broken house. And we have built this house on shards and splinters, made the kitchen floor from fine china fletchette. Like, that is such an intense metaphor and also image. Really incredible. And then the second part, I was thinking about how we had talked another week about how our generation, or maybe slightly before us, have kind of rejected having things like fancy china. It's not as common, not so much into the saving things for special occasions, only having the fancy cookware that comes out now and then, and at those times where there's often drama, because that was the other thing I thought about with these plates being broken, is those look like the kind of fancy plates that, like, you know, you bring out when grandma's coming over for dinner at, like, Christmas or Thanksgiving or, you know, holidays. I don't know if it's just me, but it tend to be times where there's drama. So having the fancy plates out at the time when things are maybe most breakable, although not that we were actually throwing our dishes for the most part. I thought that was interesting that the kids are running away from it. They're going towards the horizon. They just want time, not the material. And they don't want those plates. They are running away from the physical aspect of the plates. And this works again with the art of the images going away from the plate itself, but keeping with the spirit of the decorations on it, and just capturing it in a different way, focusing on the birds, which were decorations on the plates. Very cool. And then I agree with you, the third section is about us, and some really nice references there. So, like, the beautiful brain, I'm thinking as a reference to my book, The Beautifully Broken Brain. And then he calls me Afriella, which is the name that I use in my medieval reenactments. And I believe I say that in one of my poems, that when I'm, you know, tired of dealing with my real life, I go off and I be Afriella. And it's like the other version of me who doesn't have to worry about modern times and just lives in a distant past from before my time. And I find it really interesting that he chose to use that name. So not Afasiana, but Afriella. And he makes so many, like, wonderful references in there that shows that he's paid attention. And I think it is a big compliment to both of us that he did that in a very beautiful and respectful way. So thank you so much, Ben. This was a very touching piece.
Wonderful comment. Yeah. It's a really beautiful piece. I love how deeply you went into it. I loved hearing your observation.
I also loved what you said, the parts that I heard. My husband was talking to me a little bit, so I only got half of your comment, but the parts I heard were great.
Well, you know, the bad parts just got skipped over. Works for me.
Our next poem is by Daniel Deschino. Would you read that one, please, Babbler?
Absolutely. This is "The Institutionalized Have Time to Question Insanity" by Daniel Deschino. Dinner. Ritualistic, gluttonous, energy-wasting creatures destroying others to steal their energy. Sometimes I'm not even hungry, but I still eat. What of this earth have I destroyed so I can live another day? I have consumed a lot of destruction over the years, and what have I given back in return? So much have I laid on my plate to devour. Look at it now, empty, waiting to be filled, covered in intricate fancy designs to mask the coming massacre. How does a monster continue once he realizes he's a monster? Sometimes things just happen. So, in an impulse, not unlike a Tourette's syndrome outburst, my hands slam down, and before my brain can think, the plate smashes in front of me, my hands cut on the porcelain, and I hear laughter faintly on my pantry shelves. Blood stains the table, and I do not stop bleeding, nor do I feel pain. I just stare at the red rivulets and become entranced at the path that they take. Broken pieces, once decorative, floral, and scenic, now scattered, trying to find a purpose. And I find myself in the same chaos. I just stare at the blood, the broken porcelain, and the freed and scattered lines that once used to make sense. Now what? There was a time in my life when I would wake up, eat contently various times of the day, do what was needed around the house at night, and try to squeeze in times of leisure as a humble squid might occasionally glance at the stars. Now everything seems broken. Lines that once seemed pictures don't make sense, and blood doesn't seem to matter. What was I trying to escape? An animal raised its entire life in a zoo will not survive long in the wild. A painter often forgets the enchantment of the subject when obsessed with capturing it, and I have become blinded to the beauty beyond the plate. End poem.
Great read, Babbler. And this is a wonderful poem, Daniel. He apologizes at the end for it being so long, but I like it. I think that the length is a good suit for the way that it came together. I like the recognition that, you know, we need to destroy in order to eat. If we're carnivores, we're taking meat from the animals. If we're herbivores, we're still taking plants from the earth. So recognizing that we are taking energy from the world, and talking about how it has been for forever, like at least thousands of years, been ritualistic. We eat as part of our, like, family time, as part of our, you know, if you're going out for a date or, like, if you're meeting friends. Eating is just a thing that you do. And it says sometimes even if you have not even hungry, it's just something that you automatically do in a lot of cultures. And it's one of those things that, you know, we don't really think about unless you're maybe thinking about someone who doesn't have enough, and you're comparing that. But I like that he talks about the plate as something that that captures that. Covered in intricate fancy designs to mask the coming massacre. To make it pretty, this thing that maybe isn't so pretty. Although, I mean, nourishing your body with food can be pretty, and food is you know, often beautiful, but I really love the way that he put that together. And I also like the sound of mask and massacre together. That just works out really well. And then the storytelling of the hands, just him breaking the plate, and then the thing that really got me there was the laughter from the pantry shelves. And that made me start to picture them like in Beauty and the Beast, where like Mrs. Potts and her little cup children like being shocked by his reaction. I'm just picturing a shocked Mrs. Potts, like, what? And then the little kids are laughing. Chip, the little cup. And then the way that he's watching the blood stains on the table and the patterns that it makes. One of the images in the prompts, because of the color of the plate and the paint, it sort of does look like there's blood bleeding out of it. And I wonder if that kind of helped spark that part. I liked that the scene is scattered and it's trying to find a new purpose, and how he talks about, you know, things change when you get older. The things that mattered before don't necessarily matter anymore, and things that seemed like they made sense maybe don't make sense in the same way as you reevaluate your priorities. And when you're looking too closely at something, trying to capture it, when you miss the big picture. If you're looking at something, trying to paint it, and you're focusing on just exactly like the person's, I don't know, like their nose or something, and they're not seeing them as a whole person anymore. So the painter forgets the enchantment of the subject. I thought that was really an interesting observation. And animals raised in the zoo do not survive in the wild. You know, we become dependent on the things that we are given, you know. And so do all creatures. You learn to live a certain way. So this is just a powerful, deep piece. And that's what I love to see when, you know, an image can spark such storytelling and just amazing. The other thing was, and this is kind of a little bit of an aside, but when he breaks the plate and he, like, realizes he doesn't want to be a part of the cycle of, like, taking energy from something, reminded me so much of this book, Mr. Maxwell's Mouse, which is about a cat who he gets a promotion and he's all happy because the cat's like personified. He's wearing like a little suit, and he goes to this restaurant where usually he would buy a frozen mouse, but he's like, this is a special occasion, I'm going to get a fresh mouse, which is like more expensive and fancy. And he does it, but he's never in his life had a fresh mouse. He's only ever had the frozen ones that don't even look like mouse, like think like fish sticks instead of having like something that actually looks like something. So he gets there and his mouse on his plate is alive. And he's like, oh, this isn't ready. And they're like, oh yeah, you know, a true wild cat would eat it raw, and we know that you just got promoted, so we want you to eat like this. And he's just like totally shocked, and he's like, oh, this is like an actual mouse. And they're like, well, you always eat mice. And he's like, right, yeah. But then the mouse like talks him out of it. But something about when he was shattering the plate there, it just reminded me so much of that book. Sorry, I rambled. Babbler, what did you think?
I really enjoyed this piece. You know, just the idea that you suddenly realize that you're siphoning off of the world, you know, like how much has gone into keeping me sustained, you know, how many animals have died, how many plants have died, you know, like what kind of carbon footprint have I had? Like, you know, that's the weird thing about being a large mammal, right? Like a lot of energy goes into keeping you going, you know, and then to have guilt about it, you know, to not want that, to be like, well, that's just monstrous that, like, you know, I'm eating the flesh of living things, and to be disturbed by it. But then not know where to go from there, you know, like, okay, well, I don't want to do that anymore, but what alternative do I have, you know, when so much of life is kind of, like you were saying, wrapped up in eating, you know. I struggle with my weight, and, you know, so many times I'm like, I'm just not going to, you know, try and eat out less and try to have less food-centric activities and find things to do that aren't about food. That is really hard if you want to do anything social. Like, there is food there all the time. you know, there was a time where I was, like, envious of people who were drug addicts in a sense. Like, not really, only in a sense. But, like, you know, like, you can quit a drug cold turkey. You can't really just stop eating. You know, so, and in some ways, I think that makes it harder, you know, but it is true. Like, so much is around eating. You go to a birthday party, you're expected to eat. You meet people for dinner, you're expected to eat. You meet people for lunch, you're expected to eat. Like, just about anything that you go to, there's food there. Because it's just a part of socializing. Like, it's huge in cultural socializing. And I don't know that there's any part, like any culture in the world where that's not centric, because eating is just such like a, you know, a thing everybody does, right? So it's just interesting to think about. And now know to be like, well, I don't want to partake in this. I don't want to destroy more than I have to. I don't want to cost the world, you know, more than I need to, but I don't know what to do anymore with myself, you know, like to get really kind of wrapped up in this thinking about impact and, you know, how to reduce that. And the kind of like realization that, you know, the world was kind of centric on it. And now that you're really looking at it under a lens, you know, it's hard to enjoy. So I really liked it from that perspective. And I love the title as well. You know, the institutionalized have time to question sanity. You know, if you're busy all the time and you're living in it, you know, you're living in the moment, you're living day to day, you're, you know, on the grind, so to speak, you know, do you really take the time to examine your life? You know, whereas if you have time out and you're put a set aside and kind of taken outside of your current situation and the current scenario, you probably have a lot more time for reflection and to worry about things. You know, I sometimes think about how, like, dogs don't really think about, like, what is the purpose of my life, as far as we know. I joke sometimes that my dog's having an existential crisis when she stares at the wall for a really long time, but I don't think that's what's actually happening. You know, there's no concern with that. It's such a human thing to worry about the purpose of your life. Speaking of tangents, it makes me think of, like, the Rick and Morty episode where he builds a robot whose job is to pass the butter. And then the robot becomes sentient and is like, what is my purpose? And then when it realizes his purpose is to pass the butter, it becomes very depressed. So, anyway, I really enjoyed this piece. I did not find it too long at all in relation to his note. I thought it was a well-paced poem. I enjoyed the short lines. It gave it a clear voice, in my opinion, the way it was written. So
we're off to a really good start. Like, those two opening poems, like, blew me away. I'm like, how am I going to judge this contest? I don't know. It's going to be hard. Our next poem is by G.A. Grimm, and he gave us a SoundCloud, which is awesome. Here it is.
Porcelain Phoenix by G.A. Grimm. Calling, falling down, shattered upon stone and earth, cracked by the world, weight made a weapon, fragments like spooked deer scattered, now lay cutting in regard. A storm of brittle rain, paints the floor, dropping, dripping, a chaotic coloring of waves and ripples. Know they its worth, once the glass evolves to broken. Is it labeled trash, relevance emerged, now splintered, something to be discarded, with leftovers forgotten? True, a fragile thing did die, but there will be no mourners, or shedding of lament, for it was remade into something other, patchworked and piecemealed, perhaps, though enameled in sensations felt, coated in lessons learned, tempered anew, Tedalian in its beauty.
Wonderful, right? And thank you, GA, for the SoundCloud. I love it when people include SoundClouds. It's just really great to hear poetry in somebody's authentic voice. Sounds that broken things seems to be a little bit of a theme that GA Grimm sometimes has. And he does this theme so beautifully and so intricately. And so I love it when he writes about this topic in particular, you know, shattered upon stone and earth, cracked by the world, you know, just broken by the weight of the hard parts of living, you know, like a spooked deer. It's such a wonderful image in my mind, you know, just to be like rendered by life, essentially. And yet to know that, you know, the world like values wholeness sometimes in a way, and in the way you feel lost, like you have less value. And by that, I mean, like, there's mental illness for sure, but other things that I think about are things like, sexuality, employment. You know, so many times when you meet somebody, the first thing they ask is like, "What do you do?" Expecting to hear about your job, or addiction. You know, if someone finds out that you're an addict to something, their opinion of you changes. You know, so it's hard to sometimes look at yourself in the mirror, especially if you were conditioned as well to label people the same way, and to see yourself as broken and to be seen as broken. But then this last stanza, you know, true, a fragile thing did die, but there will be no mourners or shedding of lament, for it was remade into something other, patchworked and piecemealed, perhaps though enameled, in sensations felt, coded in lessons learned, tempered anew, the alien in its beauty. You know, to rebuild yourself into something stronger, you know, to take those pieces and paint a new art, a more expansive art, a better art, you know, to become something better than you were, and to see the value in that, you know, the value of strength. Like, yeah, something broke, but that's because I was fragile, and to not be fragile anymore, and even in that brokenness, to not have less value but more, to be more valuable because of you piecing together of yourself. I thought this was really beautiful, you know, to just, you know, don't view yourself as broken. You know, view yourself as improved, remade, recrafted, re-envisioned. I thought this was a beautiful piece. So thank you, GA Grimm. And thoughts, Christiana.
Well, I think that was a beautiful comment. I agree with everything that you said. And I love his audios. He has such a wonderful, like, speaking voice and rhythm to it. I love his accent. I just, even when his poems are sad, I just find it so calming to listen to his audios. And he puts emotion into it. I think that more people should try doing audios. And if you don't know how to make an audio, or if you're not sure how to include it in all poetry, talk to me, Athasiana, and I have kind of a little quick guide written down, and I would be happy to share that and help you, because we love when our writers give us things in their own voices. So back to G.A. Grimm's, because this was awesome. I really loved weight made a weapon. Like, the idea of gravity being what gets you. Weight made a weapon. I love that concept. I love the way it sounds. That line grabbed me. And then the idea of those fragments being like spooked deer scattering was also a really interesting image. It's like image after image. It's hard to break it up. Like the brittle rain paints the floor, all these little pieces of the broken glass. And then the idea of like something that was so beautiful suddenly being labeled as trash and tossed aside. And, you know, like you said, Babbler, sometimes that happens with people where, you know, once people are seen as, you know, having these cracks within them, could be mental illness, could be disability, could be addiction, like you said, people get kind of cast aside into the margins, into the, you know, streets, unfortunately, and are treated like trash when they actually still have a lot of value. And then he talks about how they get new life, and in this art, they become something beautiful again, tempered anew. And then also, his vocabulary is fantastic. The Dedalion, which I looked up to make sure I understood, and it is ingeniously or cunningly designed and difficult to comprehend due to complexity and intricacy, but artistic, skillful. And I do think that that is a really good description of this art. And sometimes people are beautiful in ways that is so complex that, you know, maybe not everyone can see. Maybe it's not traditional beauty, but there's beauty in the person. You know, it's the whole in the eye of the beholder, too. Is can you recognize the complex greatness of someone? And then in his AM, it says, know you are beautiful and have value no matter the shape or form or expectation placed by others. Only you can decide your purpose. And then he, of course, references the artist, Robert Strady. So just fantastic. Loved the poem. Loved the audio. And, yeah. Keep going in our contest because I'm really enjoying the writing. Okay. Just everything has been so good tonight. Maybe I've just really missed the show, but I am loving all of these poems very much. All right, our next poem is by Jenny Hunt, 2017, and Jenny's been on the board. I think she's listening. So hello, Jenny. Shout out to you. Thank you for being here with us. Babbler, for a second, I thought you were her, and I'm like, oh, she's on the line.
No. Just saying that.
She didn't sneak on. Okay. You never know. Sometimes, like last night, I'm pretty sure Phil was in the behind the scenes in the wings because in the studio, when I'm looking at the callers, it usually just have their phone numbers when I can change it to a name if I know who it is, and so I do. But last night, I didn't get a chance to do that, and then I glanced over and I saw like they were labeled, and I was just like, oh, somebody's in there. Help me out. Okay,
well,
Jenny is still in the
Halloween shows that had the random creepy voice whisper thing that nobody could explain. I still don't know what was up with that.
Yeah,
I figured it was
me
someone
either
playing like a Halloween prank, but nobody fessed up.
Nobody fessed up, and there was nobody, like, I can tell when there's someone who's speaking, in the studio, it lights up saying that there's someone there. There was nobody there. There were ghosts in the line. Okay. All right, so here's the one by Jenny Hunt, 2017. Devalued love in a broken home. Porcelain china is as priceless as our ageless souls, fragile as we are tender. Once broken, our value decreases like a broken vintage plate. The shattered pieces scattered across the wall, our broken hearts filled in by penetrating shards, destroyed, devalued, depreciated. To be tossed away like yesterday's garbage, no longer admired, appreciated, or accepted. Our once strong walls now fractured, hit and damaged by our anger, delicately, deceivingly patched, poor painted in with our love, sacrificial blood. Desperately, we try to save what's left of this broken home. End poem.
Great read, Easyana. And wonderful write, Jenny. Again, just talking about the way that the fragility of humanity can be seen similar as a porcelain plate. You know, it's so valued when it's complete and when it's perfect. And, the way they measure porcelain plates, too, for, perfection, people who evaluate them for auctions and things like that. It's really particular. They will tap pens on it, listening for specific sounds to make sure that there aren't hairline fractures or hidden bubbles in there or anything. It's a bit intense, how to determine whether or not a porcelain piece of china is, priceless, and it kind of assigns this value. And yet, it's so fragile, and the fragility of it is really kind of what gives it its value in a way. Yes, beautiful and intricate and difficult to make, but also very fragile. And yet then once it is shattered and broken, it's completely devalued. And humans are viewed similarly, and you wish they weren't, and yet they are. Reading this, I think of, when I look at the last two lines, desperately we try to save what's left of this broken home, I think of, marriage and the way people view families, and to call a divorced family a broken home, it just sounds so terrible. Do we really need to phrase it that way? What's worse than divorced parents are parents that are constantly screaming at each other. A home where nobody is happy. That's so much worse. I would so much rather people, move on from something that's irreparable and find happiness in it and not view it as broken. But people do this all the time. For some reason it makes me think of the concept of virginity, this idea that you're all pure and perfect. And then, once you engage in sex, you're less valuable. And how odd that is as a social construct. Why do we put value on this? Why do we value humanity this way? But I really enjoyed the metaphor of it, the people as priceless china, and fragile and beautiful, but even once broken, still beautiful. So I thought this was a wonderful write. There's some anger tucked in here and some resentment, but I think it's wonderfully done. So great write, Jenny. Your thoughts, Feziana?
I enjoyed it too. As for your comment, I agree that I think divorce is less damaging than parents who are constantly fighting and abusive to each other. I think that it's better for kids to have two, stable places rather than one that's an earthquake all the time. So I agree. But, you know, broken home could be one where they're still there, but there's, you know, that broken feeling. It's hard to say, but I like the title because devalued love in a broken home. It's not that there is no love, and it's important that that you recognize when something is devalued because, you know, it changes the way that you view love in general, and I think it really would influence kind of the next generation of that if they did not see the value of love and how important it was. 'Cause not just romantic love, but like love with other family members, love with friends, like, you know, love in general. There's so many different kinds. Our value decreases. And that is such a sad thing. Like, think about how as soon as a car leaves the lot, it loses so much value. And as soon as a person, you know, does something, like you said, the virginity thing, if as soon as someone is seen broken in some way, which can be, you know, small things, then they're like that vintage plate. But are they, like, you know, the plates end up being valuable in a different way, and people can too. But the idea of being scattered across the wall, again, just creates such a strong mental image to me that it's like I can hear it, that scattered across the wall. I hear that smashing. The heart's penetrated by shards, you know, it's like shrapnel, it stays in you, those broken pieces of broken relationships. I appreciated the alliteration in destroyed, devalued, depreciated, and then admired, appreciated, or accepted. You know, the words worked well together. It wasn't chosen just because of the letter. They worked in terms of meaning, and they sounded really great, so that's a good use of alliteration. It's just a sad but beautiful poem. Well done, Jenny. Thank you for sharing.
Mm-hmm. Great comment.
Our next poem. Oh, thanks.
No, go ahead. Complimenting you.
Our next poem is by Ima Rima, which is for you to read, please, Babbler.
Absolutely. This is Privy to History by Ima Rima. In 1776, a Philadelphia house became a tavern for a social mix, known as the Humphreys Place by name. There was a privy dug outside for patrons for relief to use, so a dump was satisfied for broken dish of eats and brews. Pieces of ceramic and glass for centuries later got dug up for historians to amass, fight for freedom on plate and cup. Tossed in a privy long ago, now museum pieces on show. And folks.
I'm happy you read that because you had such a, like, bounce to the way that you read it. It seemed perfect. It had almost the sound of, like, a limerick. Like, I don't think it actually is a limerick, but they had that, I don't know, a fun cadence to it, and I think that you captured that really well, Babbler. This is fun. It has that historical bit to it, which makes sense because they're old-fashioned plates. But then it also brings up the fact that, you know, when we look in at things in, say, museums, we do see plates and cutlery and all those things from different eras. And it's something that we make judgments on of like, oh, look, this is the technology they had. These are the materials they had. When we look at different eras and what we dig up, but do we get the accurate of them? Because it makes me laugh when it's talking about like something that was thrown in a privy. I mean, like, you know, if you're tossing a plate in an outhouse, that's probably not their favorite plate. the broken dishes that we make judgments on, you know, the ones from ancient Greece that we found absolutely gorgeous, and it's curious how our era would be judged in the future if they dug up the relics from now. Yeah, just the choice of it being tossed in a privy really amuses me. There's a lightness to this piece. What did you think, Babbler?
I like it. I thought it was a fun sonnet, which was well done. And I also love, I believe this is referential to the idea of a middens. So, you know, a lot of archaeological finds and cultural digs come out of something called a middens, which is like before there was indoor plumbing. And what we do really with sanitation now, I mean, we still had trash dumps. So there were like these big fields and holes that all the trash and human waste and everything else would go out into. So it was not uncommon to throw like broken pottery and plates, et cetera, into essentially a toilet. And then that would get scooped out by some poor soul and put into what is called the middens. And a lot of things that we see now in natural history museums and cultural museums and things like that actually come out of a midden, which, yeah, is this essentially like an ancient garbage dump, you know? And that's such an interesting place that's like where we find like the history of humanity. But, you know, I assume if you were to look at even us, you know, thousands of years from now, the best place to probably find a lot of things will be in our trash heaps, right? I mean, if you want to know a lot about our daily lives, et cetera, that's kind of where things end up. So I love that there's a poem about it, you know, about the middens and finding, you know, the broken things that were tossed into the toilet that now have value again. You know, like it was valuable and then it was broken and it was garbage and it was worthless and now it has worth again. You know, so interestingly cyclical, right? I mean, it probably has more value now than it had then. And yet at one point it was so worthless that someone threw it into a toilet. So I love this. I thought this was great. Especially the title, I thought was very clever, privy to history, you know, privy having the double meaning of being a toilet, but also, you know, privileged being in the know, you know, knowing about history. You know, I thought that was a great use of the double meaning of the word privy. So I enjoyed this. It was fun. It had a wonderful cadence, great rhyme. It was interesting to see it in a sonnet form. I loved that it was in a completely different direction than so many of the other ones that we've read tonight, but also still it's similar, you know, like the fluctuating value of things. So well done, I'm a Rima. I enjoyed it.
I'm so glad that you pointed out the multiple ways of looking at privy, because for some reason, I didn't even clue in that the title, I knew the title wasn't referring to toilets, but I didn't, like, connect to how that was used differently in the poem than it was in the title. So that's so awesome. wonderful. I do love words with double meanings like that. I mean, it makes the English language, like, ridiculous to learn that we have so many homonyms. But, or that's not even a homonym because it's the exact same word. But it's just, yeah. fantastic wordplay. Homophone. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, it is wonderful wordplay. Yeah, English language is a hot mess.
It really is. It really,
every
really is.
Has an exception. There are rules that don't have exceptions, but they're very few and far between. You know, like one of the weird rules that doesn't have an exception is adjective order. You know, there's an order to adjectives, and you instinctually follow them, even though you're never taught what they are.
Yes, we talked about that a few weeks ago, and it's nuts. Like, yeah.
You will always say them in the same order, but it's never taught. It's never discussed. It's just an intrinsic thing of the English language, even when it's not helpful. Like, even wouldn't it be more helpful to reorder them to make it more clear what you're saying? Doesn't matter. You have it in this certain order. Yeah, but anyway, most rules in the English language don't apply all the time, so... kind of, I don't even know that I call them rules. This is like guidelines of the English language. Anyway.
I was just thinking about, there's this meme, and I don't, like, I don't remember who the artist is, but it shows up all the time for me. There's, like, this girl who's, like, trying to fall asleep, and then the brain says, like, there's, like, a floating brain image, and it's, like, are you trying to go to sleep? And she says, yes. And then it's like, okay. And then it, like, says something ridiculous. So one of the ones that I've gotten for that was, like, every C in, oh, no, I can't remember the word. But it's some, like, ridiculous English language word that has a whole bunch of C's. It's like every C makes a different sound in this word. And then it shows the girl with her eyes, like, wide open. It's like, now she's not going to sleep because she's going to try to figure that out. I'm like, yes.
So they were going, why? Yes.
And there's that other meme where it's like, there's the girl looking all stressed out, and she's like, I bet he's thinking about other girls, and he's like laying there just like thinking about things, and it's always like something ridiculous, and it's like, why is there and there spelled the same? Definitely not a thinking about other girls thing. Okay, now that I've been sufficiently sidetracked, we're going to go on to the next poem called Blue Sea, Blue Sky by Weaver of Dreams. Deng Gai studied his junk for the long trip home. Jagged rocks and heavy seas were perils to overcome. His precious cargo was stable, though these 9 months had taken a toll. His sweetly shy, tiny wife needed bamboo walls around her, her mother and sisters near. Not that she ever complained. She showed pride and fortitude, but Deng could sense her fear of the heaving squall. Deng knew it was not the sea that terrified his wife. Rather, what was hidden in the blue water. Here lurked Shui Gui, preyed on those who sailed here. Then he saw the land, turned to tell his wife to see her dragged over the side, then disappear. There was no time for thought. He reached out to grasp her hand, but it was gone from sight. He slid into the sea. His only thought was to be with her again. End poem.
This was really interesting. I love that there's a different take on this, you know, to weave it into a story, to use it as a platform for storytelling, which I think works really well with the art form as well. You know, to take the broken pieces of plate and expand upon the art is storytelling in its own way, you know, to say, well, what would the larger scene look like for this plate? And now to take that and be like, well, what's happening in this larger scene? You know, I really enjoyed. And you've got, you know, this man who is sailing his way home and has been sailing, you know, for 9 months. And looking forward to seeing, you know, his sweetly shy, tiny wife who needed bamboo walls around her, you know. And just kind of painting the story of this, you know, the sailor who, not sailor, but the person who's coming home and yet, you know, shooey glee, waiting to, you know, lay a trap and pull him under sea, you know, to find a wife again, you know. And it starts with the flip. You know, the footnote here that the Shui Gui are spirits of people who drown. They lurk in the place where they died and drag unsuspecting victims underwater and then drown them to take possession of their bodies, which is so creepy. You know? body snatching spirits, which, you know, creepy, but kind of cool, you know, to be returning to your wife after 9 months and your wife is really paranoid of these spirits that pull sailors into the water. She gets pulled in. I thought it was a really fascinating story to tell, you know, to then dive after her. It feels very Asian, you know, Deng Gui and Shui Gui, that sounds very Chinese to me. I don't actually know, but just, you know, it sounds Chinese. And to paint the picture and give it a story, you know, the sailor returning home and to last minute be lost to these spirits. You know, and my intuition tells me that his wife is not actually dragged into the water, because if she's not worried about these spirits, she's not going to be, like, hanging out by the bay. She's probably, you know, in those little bamboo walls with, you know, mom and sisters. And it's probably the Shui Gui that's, like, luring you into the water. And that's the image that it took to convince you to dive in. So he's lost. Lost to the spirits, lost to the sea. But I enjoyed it. It's dark, it's kind of creepy, and yet I think it does a really great job of expanding on the story more. So thank you, Weaver. Your thoughts, Aziana?
Well, first of all, I apologize if I said the names totally wrong, because I did not know how to pronounce him or the creatures. I thought the beginning was a little unusual with him, like, studying his junk for the long trip home. Like, it's talking about, like, his precious cargo. But to call it his junk seemed a contrast to the precious cargo. And then because it was 9 months that had taken a toll, and he has this wife who needs to be with her mother and sisters, I kind of expected it to be that she was pregnant and that part of that precious cargo was the baby, but then that never came to be. So I don't know. I was like waiting for there to be something about a baby for some reason. I was stuck up on that.
It is
definitely a terrifying thing. Pardon?
I think the junk is the boat. It's a type of boat called a junk. I don't think it's like he's looking at his crappy stuff. I think it's like his vessel is a junk. It's a type of ship.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm seeing it in multiple ways now. Because also at first, I mean, studying his junk kind of sounded like a dirty thing to me. And then I was like, no, must be his stuff. But then... Now your way makes the most sense. Okay. But I just sounded super classy in that comment. Okay. I found it really interesting.
9 months, why not?
Well, I mean, you know, like maybe he was alone in that boat the whole time. He's imagining that he has a wife. interesting that when it's describing in the AN the Shrigi, it says they drag unsuspecting victims, and she was not an unsuspecting victim. She was terrified of them. She was, like, waiting for something bad to happen. So I actually really like your theory, Babbler, although I hadn't thought about it until you said that maybe she is safe. Maybe it's him who's being tricked in. You know, it's like the siren song, but instead it's like, oh, come save your wife that we stole. We didn't really steal her, but we got you now. It seems like trickery. It does.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. This is definitely a very different take than, like, anyone else in the contest, but I find it very fascinating, and it makes sense that, you know, looking at that plate and how things emerged from it, it's like a story is coming to life out of the plate. And so we get to hear that story. That's really cool. Thank you, Weaver of Dreams, for sharing that.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I may have also butchered those names. I don't speak Chinese, so I don't know.
Yours sounded like I was believing the way that you said it, though.
Well, you know, part of the issue with taking Chinese and putting it into English is you lose the intonations. You know, they have four intonation sounds. And they can very distinctly alter, like, how a word sounds and what it means. Like, the word ma, depending on your inflection, you know, can mean horse, it can mean mom, it can mean, like, four different things. So, you know, when you anglicize it like this, it makes it difficult because you lose that aspect of the language.
I wonder if my nephew, like, secretly knows some language, because for the longest time he would say mom for absolutely everything, but he had, like, different tones of, like, it was like mom, 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 and, like, depending on which way he said mom, you could tell which thing he meant, but mom was just the only word. It was funny. The one time he called me mom, like, when first, I hadn't seen him in a long time, and I was like, no, I'm Auntie. And his brother goes, no, you'll be mom. Everyone is mom. Like, oh, so cute. But he the tone. Some people and some languages can just make tone change absolutely everything. Anyway, I'm off in La La Land, but we're going to read the one by Julie Buck. I believe it's your turn to read, Closer Than Before.
All right. This is Closer Than Before by Julie Buck. Even being reincarnated as a plate, I come broken. Fragments of me scatter around my family tree. And it's all I can muster to keep my bloodline alive, using memory strands to hold on to pieces of me that is chipped free. And I will pull and pull, knowing home is where I'm going. Home is what I'm knowing. One lone seagull performs a spiritual soar, letting me know I'm closer than before. Even being reincarnated as a plate, I'm dismembered. This was atrociously not how I want to be remembered. I'll get it together, because I always do, resourceful I can be. And I won't even laugh when you're eating off of me. End poem.
That was an excellent read, and really cool poem by Julie Buck. I like the idea of coming back as a plate and being pissed off that you're broken, that, you know, you came back thinking that at least I'll be whole now. You know, that's the advantage of reincarnation. You're going to get a fresh start. But no, to come back as broken and to be fragments scattered around the family tree. It's like you're still connected to your family, but you're little bits and pieces. You're not a stable piece of it, and that's really frustrating. I really liked memory strands to hold on to pieces of me that have chipped free. And there are, within the image that is the prompt, there are these lines that kind of go out, and I think they're what Dan had talked about as like the blood dripping, but they do look like it could be yarn that's holding things together as well. So that idea of the memory, holding on to those little bits and pulling it towards the center of the plate, I really like that interpretation of it. And I will pull and pull, knowing home is where I'm going, home is what I'm knowing. And that idea of like trying to work your way back into the whole, which is kind of like different what some of the poems have been about, trying to escape the plate and flying away. But in this one, she's trying to get the plate all back together. So it's interesting to have the other perspective there. Atrociously not how I wanted to be remembered, to be remembered as the broken one. That's so hard. Resourceful as I can be, and I won't even laugh when you're eating off of me. And the capitalization there feels very pointed, where your is all capitalized and me has the capital M. And that feels like a strong statement there in the last sentence. Very nice, Julie. And Julie had planned to call with us last week, and unfortunately we got postponed and she wasn't able to this week. That would have been cool to hear it in her voice as well. What did you think, Babbler?
I really liked it, you know, this idea of reincarnation, you know, like to be reborn as something inanimate, you know, to still have like consciousness, you know, and the idea of that, like, even when you're reborn, you're broken, you know, even being reincarnated as a plate, I come broken, you know, which implies that you're broken before too, which, you know, in like an Eastern sense, like a Buddhist sense of reincarnation would make sense, right? Because you're supposed to be reincarnated over and over as you become more and more perfect, you know, to become complete, to find that wholeness and reach nirvana or, you know, whatever the school of thought prescribes there. But like, you know, so here I am as a plate, and even as a plate, I can't be perfect. You know, but to still remember and to still try to hold it together, you know, remember who you were and what you're about and the things that matter, you know, knowing that home is where I'm going, home is what I'm knowing, you know, so like whatever, you know, working towards becoming more complete, more perfection, painting a story, you know, memories and the places that you've been and the places that you've, you know, that you're going, and just kind of to tie all of that together, to include that in part of who you are, perfect or no, and knowing that you're getting there. You know, but not wanting to, I relate to this was atrociously not how I want to be remembered, you know, not wanting to be remembered as a broken person. You know, no one wants to be remembered for their flaws, right? Everyone has flaws, like nobody's perfect, but that's not what you want to be remembered for, you know? Like, can you please remember that I was a strong person, a funny person, you know, a hardworking person? Don't remember, like, and she had bipolar, and there were weeks where she didn't brush her hair. Like, that's not what I want to be remembered for. It doesn't make it any less true, but, like, I hope that's not, like, the most memorable part of my personality, you know, the flaws. You know, that's what it makes me think of. And then I'll get it together, because I always do, resourceful I can be, and I won't even laugh when you are eating off of me. You know, it makes me think, like, eating off of a broken plate. You know, who's eating off of a broken plate? You know, and who in that scenario is better off, the person eating off of the broken plate or the broken plate? I thought that was really interesting. And then the you're eating off of me, you know, like, who is the you're that's being addressed? Because there doesn't appear to be, like, any bitterness held towards a particular person, unless there was someone who broke them to begin with, you know, like maybe, abusive relationship or something in the past, and you pass away and you come back, and then even then you're broken and just, like, to be eaten off of by that person is like, wow, this is kind of a joke. But I don't know. There's not a whole lot of context given to that piece, but it does seem very pointed. You know, the fact that it's italicized and capitalized when other words in this are not, it feels very intentional, even if I'm not sure what the intent is. But I like the piece. So thank you, Julie. What's
that
going on now? Go ahead.
A small side note, because I'm just remembering something that kind of relates. When I was working on this contest, I saw this post in a group that I'm in. It's like a kind of like cottagecore aesthetic kind of group. And there was this one woman who said that her grandmother had always had these teacups that, like, when her grandchildren came over, and she had a lot of granddaughters, they would all have a specific teacup. And when they were going through her grandmother's things, I think she had just passed away, some of the teacups broke, and they were very upset about that. And what she did, because each teacup had a different pattern, was she took the one that was hers, and she brought it to a tattoo artist, and she got a tattoo of, like, the flowers that were on that particular teacup, and then she used the pieces of the teacup to make, like, a planter kind of thing, and it was just so beautiful, and it just made me think about this contest, because it was, like, turning the broken china into something, and it just worked out that it was, like, at a time when I was, like, doing this contest that had to do with that, I saw this post, and it was just, like, it was very touching. Side note. Hi, Naomi.
I like that.
Naomi Sarah is on the board. She is one of the hosts of Blog Talk Shows for Late Night Poets. There we go. All right. Our next poem is Beauty in the Brokenness by Syker. Behold the shattered plate, once a vessel of great worth, but now its pieces lay in wait, desolate, scattered on the earth. But see how art gives it new life, each fragment a canvas to be painted, a story told through colors rife, and from its brokenness beauty is created. Metaphorically speaking, if I were the plate, what from my story would be essential to save? Perhaps my resilience in the face of fate, or the strength I found in overcoming the grave. For we all have a story to tell, a narrative of our past, present, and future. And like the plate, we may have fallen and knelled, but we too can be mended, made anew, and mature. Maybe it's the lessons learned from our pain, or the scars that remind us of what we've been through. Perhaps the joys that help us stay sane, or the love that keeps us whole and true. But what could be added by those who see beyond the cracks and shattered parts of me? Perhaps a touch of kindness to set me free, or a dose of empathy to help me see. For sometimes we need a helping hand to guide us through the darkness and the strife, a friend to help us stand and give us the courage to live our life. And just like the plate, we are all broken in some way, shape, or form. We have been scarred, but we too can be mended, our stories spoken, and from our pain something beautiful can be marred. So take a long look at the art and contemplate how the plate, given a second chance to restart, can remind us that it's never too late. For like life is a canvas, and we are the paint. each breaststroke a moment to be cherished. And though we may fall and feel faint, we too can be mended, made whole and nourished. So let us embrace our brokenness and see the beauty in our flaws and imperfections, for it is through our brokenness that we can find strength and connection. And just like the plate, we can rise again, a masterpiece in the making, a symbol of our resilience and strength, a reminder that there's no such thing as breaking. So let us learn from the art and see the beauty in the brokenness, for it is through our scars that we can find our greatness and goodness. End poem.
Great read, Afasiana. You know, this poem is really direct. You know, like, it really says what it means. It kind of takes this metaphor of the shattered plate and applies it to what it is to be human, and then really explains it, you know, really digs in and is like, what does this mean, you know, as a metaphor for being a person? You know, to look at the shattered plate that, you know, once a vessel of great worth, but now as pieces lay in wait, desolate, scattered on the earth. But adding its art gives it a new life, you know, to rebuild, to make something of it. You know, if we were the plate, you know, what are the essential pieces? Like, what is it that you need to be considered whole again, or worthy, or valuable, you know, or even just beautiful, you know? And that resiliency is really, you know, what it's about. That is the beauty and the brokenness, you know. The stories that we have to tell that are kind of enriched by the broken pieces and the filling in and the brush strokes, you know, making art out of something that was once painful, you know, and continuing to expound upon that beauty, you know, what could be added by those who see beyond the cracks and shattered parts of me. You know, it reminds me of the previous poem where it's like, you don't want to be remembered, you know, for your flaws. You don't want to be seen as just the negative parts of you, the parts that you struggle with. You know, look past that, you know, and how wholeness is found not despite the breaks, but really because, you know, and the ways to build on it. You know, let's take a long look at the art and contemplate how the plate, given a second chance to restart, can remind us that it's never too late. You know, like, even if you feel broken, even if you feel incomplete, you know, it's still a starting point, you know. There's opportunities there to grow and to turn into something greater. You know, we can rise again, a masterpiece in the making. I really enjoyed this. It felt very powerful. It almost felt like a little bit like a Shakespearean soliloquy in a way, you know, like I could see someone like reading it as like a monologue on a stage, you know, in relation to like some event in a play. I enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. It had a very strong voice and a very direct message. So thank you, Psyche. Afasiana, your thoughts?
I liked it. I thought it really brought the prompt to life. You know, it recognized the various aspects of my prompt and worded it very eloquently. I think that there was a really good kind of rhyme scheme and rhythm to it. It feels like it has some really strong structure, although I'm at a loss for if it's actually like an official, like it's not a sonnet, but it's It definitely seems like it has solid structure to it, and yet the structure doesn't take away from the heart of it, which sometimes is a risk with structure. I think that it keeps its depth and its meaning within structure, which is a challenge to do. I thought it was beautiful the way that it was put together, just fabulous. Thank you, Psyker. I think Psyker is new to our contest because he was asking about what it is to be on our show. And welcome to the show, Psyker. I hope that you've great to have some new voices. Maybe eventually we'll get your actual voice along with your writing voice. That'd be really cool. I'm getting some Bob Ross vibes from a lot of these because it's the make your mistakes into something good. There was one part here when it was like your brush strokes, each brush stroke is a moment to be cherished. There was something about like even when it doesn't go quite right, those imperfections can become something like a new opportunity. And it just made me think of like happy little birds or like, because Bob Ross will turn any little mistake into something. Now, I would say Psychers seems like a lot more serious and dark than Bob Ross, but it still has that kind of like, you know, turn your mistakes into something beautiful. And I think that's a beautiful sentiment. I'm really curious what Bob Ross would write in response to our prompts. Could be interesting.
Did Bob Ross write poetry?
No. No, not to my knowledge. I think he was a painter. But, you know, he had commentary that we could turn into something. Oh, and Naomi just added a poem to our list. She says if we have time for it. So thank you, Naomi. Mm-hmm. But next up, we have Miriam Kilmer. And I'm trying to remember whose turn it is. Is it your turn to read?
I don't know, but I can.
Sure.
Not a poem.
You go right
I
ahead.
Jump in. This is Broken Heritage by Miriam Kilmer, inspired by Robert Strati's Fragmented series. My mother chose blue willow for her pattern. Blue lines and dots covered white china, a Chinese landscape made in England. It told of far-off countries, secret stories, family traditions. We used it when company came, in place of our old, scratched, teal-blue plastic tableware. We were so very careful with the china. We centered dinner plates so gently in each place, cup and saucer on the right, smaller plate for bread and butter on the left. If soup was in the offing, we centered bowls on every dinner plate. Eating together centered our gathering. As the French do, we ate our salad after the main course. Those fancy, scalloped, squarish, mid-sized plates were stacked aside. My parents invited guests who had no other place to celebrate. We were just children, or most of us were. Sometimes we got too excited or careless. Sometimes one of us would bump another. Things got broken. Blue willows smashed. Pieces of pagodas fractured. Little Chinese people shattered. Splinters everywhere, beyond repair. By the time my mother died, most remaining pieces were cracked and chipped, but all conveyed fantastic craft, visions of alluring vistas, unveiled, fragmented memories of family feasts. End poem.
Great read, Babbler, and thank you, Miriam Kilmer. I think this is wonderful. I like the feel of this family, you know, inviting those people who had no place else to go. That's one of those things that is just so heartwarming to me. You know, when I first moved out west, I had no family or friends here, and one of my acquaintances, who quickly became a good friend, used to invite me to her orphan's dinners, is what she called them, and it was like if she was doing Thanksgiving or something, anybody who didn't have a family went to Laura's house, and I really appreciated that, and this seems like one of those homes that just takes people in like that, and there's like, it doesn't talk about the children being punished about breaking things, it was like, we were just children, and, you know, some things happen. But the way that it's described with the blue willow smashed and the pieces of the pagodas fractured and the stories within those dishes were sometimes lost. But after the loss of the mother, they kept the chipped and cracked pieces because all those final lines, vision of alluring vistas unveiled, fragmented memories of family feasts. And it doesn't matter if they're a little bit broken. You know, those memories are precious, those connections to those family times when they would use this special plate. That's very heartwarming to me. I love, love, love that ending. What did you think, Babbler?
I really relate to this. My mom had a china set that she got. I'm not sure where she got it from. I don't know if she inherited it from somebody or maybe it was a wedding gift of some kind. I'm not really sure. But she still has it. It's blue with, like, silver edges, and it was, like, the china, and it only came out for very special holidays and occasions. But we were very poor. So when we accidentally broke these pieces of china, it's not like we got screamed at, but, like the guilt was really bad because there's, like, no replacing it, you know, and you could tell that my mom was upset. She wouldn't, like, scream at us, but, like, you could tell that she was upset. And it's funny because it's carried over to, like, when I break something that's valuable to me, I will, like, cry and scream and get, like, irrationally angry for, like, an hour. And I was just like, just put it in the trash. I don't just respond rationally to breaking things. And I know that, but it doesn't really stop me. Like, my emotional response to breaking a valuable dish of some kind is a little unhinged. And I know that about myself. I get very upset for, like, about an hour. And after that, I'm fine. But I relate to this because it was similar. We had this particular dish set for events, family events. And it only came out for Christmas or Thanksgiving. That's really about it. I don't remember any other time that we really broke it out. But other than that, it was like a complete hodgepodge of just like trash, cutlery, and plates. So in that way, I can really see this. And now I, you know, sometimes I do think about it. You know, the what's left of her china set, because it's certainly not a whole piece now. And it's probably not scratched or anything, though, because we really didn't use it that often. But it's interesting how it works kind of into your memories, because I certainly think of those plates and those dishes when I think of Christmas and Thanksgiving. So I really enjoyed the nostalgia of this ride. I thought it was beautifully done. So a wonderful share from Marion. Thank you.
Excellent comment. Thank you for sharing about your family's plates, too, and how that connection, because I think that there is a nostalgia here that, you know, that kind of special dishes, I'm trying to think of the word. I keep saying china, but I don't think that's actually, like, do people call it china? I don't know why I have that in my head. Because they were made in China originally? I'm not sure. Fancy dishes. There is that connection to our past with that. Next, I'm going to read the poem called Red Rain by Stephen T. Wellman. Red Rain. So, you cannot pick up all your broken pieces. Let them scatter. What the hell does it matter? We are all broken plates. Only indifference hates. Let your soulful colors flow. Your broken thoughts you cannot repair, so share them. Exchange your mayhem for magnificence, majestic, melancholic mosaics. Your emptiness is not colorless. Allow your pain. Color the red rain with your broken, distinctively vivid thoughts. End poem.
Great read. I really enjoyed this write. It was very colorful, the way the language worked. It was so wonderfully descriptive, you know, a lot of these poems talked about the beauty of the brokenness, but this really kind of painted what the beauty of the brokenness is. You know, it's not about putting yourself together, it's not about making it better. It's not about healing. It's about embracing it, you know, flaunt it, you know. Yeah, you're a little off. You're a little weird. You're a little different. You're a little strange. Share it. Show it off. Like, that's what makes you different. That's what makes you unique. That's what makes you who you are. You know, your majestic, melancholic mosaics, you know, you're not happy all the time. That's fine. You know, talk about it. Speak up. You know, people want to hear it. You know, be who you are. Be who you are. Don't try to be something different. Because who you are is unique and beautiful. And I love this, you know, devil may care and everyone else can enjoy you for you kind of attitude. I like it. You know, it's not about fixing yourself. It's about how being broken isn't really being broken. It's just being normal. Because everyone's a little bit broken. So I enjoyed it. I thought this was a one wonderful write, a positive take on what it is to be smashed. So I enjoyed it. Thank you, Stephen. What did you think, Susanna?
I love everything you just said, Babbler. I think that was wonderful. And I completely agree. He really got into the, like, embrace your weird kind of mentality of, you know, yeah, you're not going to be able to pick it up. You're not going to be able to put it back together. And that's okay, because maybe this broken way is the authentic way. You can't repair it, but I really loved exchange your mayhem for magnificence, majestic, melancholic mosaics. I love that. And not just because it's alliteration, which I do love, but the idea of a mosaic being both melancholic and majestic. You know, there are sad bits in that mosaic, in that art made up of all those little broken pieces, but it's beautiful overall, and it has value beyond each little broken piece with the way that it's put together. You know, there's a method to that madness. It's not just mayhem. It is magnificence. I thought that was absolutely wonderful. Thank you for sharing, Stephen. Babbler, I'm putting yours up, except that I accidentally put Stephen's up again. So look, just one second. Let's actually
paint
the one that I mentioned. Read it again. It is good.
Super.
Let's do yours.
I took a little more of an abstract position on this than what other people did. I didn't title this one. So. I'm looking for an ocean. Puddle, pond, falsy faucet to tip-tip-tap its way in, rabbits torn to shreds by hungry jaws on a late-night National Geographic special, rigid kisses and fish eyes in episode 14 of the latest K-drama, where everyone pretend but are really so simple. Origami cranes are just squares of paper. Mine was never folded, wadded up and tossed across the room, 6 inches shy of the bin. Solitary dromedary, plodding 1,000 miles through the desert, sturdy knees soldier on, travel on, because there's nowhere else to go, looking for an oasis that dried up an age ago. About the hollow arms of my mother, I've allowed to wrap around me again, because she's only human, and I'm only broken. I see her in my smile, my face wavering in her wet porcelain gaze. No one ever said it would be easy. I knew it would be hard and unfair, senseless and cruel. They told me. Play shell over a soft center I locked myself out of. No one ever said it'd be so dry, looking for an oasis at 2 a.m., trying not to find it in the bottom of a bottle, pressed against the couch in front of a muted TV screen, thinking about broken faucets, Grand Canyons, and the merciless nature of mothers. End poem.
Fantastic poem and read. I love that ending and the merciless nature of mothers. And also the trying not to find it in the bottom of a bottle. it's, you know, there's a lot of strength in that. I like the onomatopoeia in the beginning, the tap. I always like onomatopoeia. And the violence of the rabbits being torn to shreds in contrast with, like, the kind of cheesiness of K-drama. It's like there's the viciousness of things that you expect to be cute, and then there's the cuteness of things that are pretending to be vicious, going opposite ways. I like that you talk about the origami that never becomes origami sometimes, wadded up and tossed across the room, and not even making it to the garbage can. I liked when you used the porcelain to describe your mother's gaze to my face wavering her wet porcelain gaze, that it connects it to the prompt again, but also it's just like there's something about that description of the eyes where there's the tears. It's like the gaze is the glazed over kind of look, and the difficulty of reconnecting with someone who in some ways maybe broke you in the past, and recognizing, you know, her humanity and that she was broken too, and that it's, you know, the clay shell over a soft center. I also really like that. In general, awesomeness. Thank you for sharing, Bebler.
Thank you. Yeah, I don't know. I took a different take on it. You know, I just thought about, like, the interrelatedness of different things. I looked at, like, all the different plate designs. Kind of like, what do they make me think of? Yeah, and just, like, emotional fragility. And sometimes how I struggle to express it sometimes. So that's the direction I took.
I think you're pretty damn good at expressing your emotional fragility. Your poetry is like, yes. I know sometimes it's easier in writing, but you certainly kick ass in writing vulnerable pieces. And yes, kick ass and vulnerable can go together. In fact, they often do. I find vulnerability to be kick ass. That could be a title of a book, Kick Ass Vulnerability. All right. Oh, maybe the next rap-free anthology. I'm going to do that. Okay, Kick-Ass Vulnerability. Note to self. This next one is called The Broken Plate by Keith M. Drew. I always feel remorse when there a crack is found in a plate it made by hands 300 years it felt the ground. It is now broken and never to be the same, to never or adorn the shelf again. A fortunate spread in pieces on the floor, its history lost, the beauty it to never be no more. It is not just like beauty and the same. She was a goddess once, but then all beauty over time is claimed by nature in its cruelty, her fate. It will dwindle, ever be no more, just like a lost and broken plate. End poem.
Wonderful read. I enjoyed how this talked about, you know, how something can last a really long time. You know, it can seem permanent. It can seem, you know, like it's going to last forever. And yet in a moment can break. You know, something can last 300 years, and then in one careless moment of falling to the ground, it can be shattered and never be the same. You know, is history lost, the beauty to never be no more, you know, to once have been perfect. To me, this poem is about impermanence, you know, about, you know, how things become lost and shattered, and even when it seems like it's going to exist indefinitely, and then it doesn't. By nature and its cruelty, her fate, it will dwindle, ever be no more, just like a lost and broken plate. Everything ends. You know, everything comes to a conclusion, even if it seems like it might not. I thought this was a really beautiful piece. I enjoyed the pacing of it. I thought it was interesting, the placements of the commas and the line breaks. I think gave it a really interesting pacing that made it feel almost like holding a breath. I liked it. You keep through. Faziana, your thoughts?
I agree it had an interesting pace, and I wish that I had read it all in advance before reading it because it took me a little bit to find that rhythm. You know, once I do, I see it so clearly. And I realize I made a mistake. I said a fortunate spread, and it's a fortune spread. It's, you know, a valuable piece, a valuable item that has been broken and lost. I like the emphasis on history. It's history lost. And I think you're right, that Babbler, that it's about impermanence and how even those things that we think will last forever and that we've kind of taken for granted as long-lasting aren't necessarily going to. It's a strong statement, very good way of looking at the broken plate in a metaphorical way. I think we have just enough time that we're going to squeeze in our last poem. So I'm going to put that up, and will you please read Naomi's poem?
Absolutely. This is I Bleed For You by Naomi Sarah. Watching your eyes turn away, I bleed, I bleed, I bleed for you. As I grasp the wheel of my dream of an us, could I have forgotten myself on my way? Just to prove to you that I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. Asking myself every day, but you, could you love me so? Could I stay to exist for the half times? Would you forge me into what I don't want? Could I live in the shadow of your desires? I don't want to leave, but will I end up a delicate piece of broken china, shattered with ragged, sharp edges on which others cut themselves as they try to pick me up and put me back together again? For you have broken me so much that all you have left me with is how to hate myself so much for having loved you. No, I don't want to be just a fleeting fling that washes up against the curb outside your heart in tomorrow's trash. As watching your eyes turn away, I bleed, I bleed, I bleed for you. Pieces of me torn and shred, once shiny and intricate, cracked and chipped beyond repair, cast into a bottomless garage bin, hunted with the shrill cries of the drip, drip of my own blood. End poem.
Great read, Babbler, and wonderful poem, Naomi. Again, I'm enjoying onomatopoeia with the drip, drip, dripping of the blood. That last stanza really hit me. The idea of it being a bottomless garage bin, too, and haunted with that noise. I really liked the way that you said, I don't want to be just a fleeting fling that washes up against the curb outside your heart in tomorrow's trash. Like, washing up against the curb, there's, like, this, there's something really special about the way that that is worded. All right, we have 1 minute left, so Babbler, I can give you a chance to comment as well.
I really liked it. I thought it was very emotionally intense. You know, to me, it was the story of somebody who wants to be with somebody who really is in love with somebody but just can't because they can't subject themselves to the kind of damage of unreciprocated love to that degree, you know, to that kind of abuse. You know, so walking off despite the pain, you know, to bleed for somebody because you love them but it's not reciprocated. You know, I don't want to leave, but I will end up a delicate piece of broken china. It was a beautiful write, Naomi. I really liked it. I wish I had more time. Well done.
Me too. It was wonderful. I am getting cut off for time, though, so thank you so much to everyone who wrote and shared their poems. Thank you, Babbler, for your excellent comments, and thank you, Fill My Eyes, for this time on the show. We will be back again next week. Good night, everyone.